following program do not necessarily reflect those of WPRK, its management, or employees of Rollins College.
Broken glass everywhere. People pissing on the fridge, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise. Got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room, roaches in the back. Junkies in the alley with the baseball bat. I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far. Cause a man with a tow truck repossessed my car. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how.
Hello. Hello, Winter Park. You're listening to WPRK and Punkonomics here in Winter Park, Florida.
Yeah.
We're starting the show with Dr. Benny Balick.
Yes, we are. Hello.
As he likes to call himself Dr. Punkonomics.
No. That was you. You coined that, didn't you?
And we have a very dear guest in here.
Okay, right. Let me put, what? Hello? Yes? Can you hear me? Yeah. No, I'm just joking. I'm still recuperating from those new public announcements you played for us, some of which I've never heard before, although taking care of your old parents. We're making some really inappropriate jokes here in the studio about pet care and parents care and such. But our topic, as I of course posted on punkonomics.org and on associated social networks, is education. As we have talked about that several times before, different contexts. Today we have with us a educational revolutionary, you know, if we're coining names for each other. So we have with us Cindy Hamilton, who does, primarily opt out Orlando and talk about high stakes, right? I always think high risk, high stakes, testing and common core, and other, diseases plaguing our education.
And more high
system.
Risk education issues. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And we also have a regular, my son Felix, who is actually a victim of the system, right? And Shaheen's starting us off, and Jesse will join us later, and who knows, you never know who's going to step through the door. So I'm going to basically just start off letting Cindy talk and tell us all about it, or at least launch us, and we'll just take it from there, right?
Sure, thank you. Opt Out Orlando is really an advocacy group and turned activists. And we have, what we do is to educate parents and kids, students, on how to opt out of high-stakes testing by using loopholes in the statute. So we have families with kids from kindergarten through 11th grade this year who want to know how to not participate in high-stakes testing. And when we say high stakes, we mean punitive damages attached to tests. So you've got teacher evaluations, performance pay, school grades, and you have all of that riding on the back of 8-year-olds. And also whether they're going to be remediated, retained, or in the case of 10th graders, whether they're going to graduate. So that's what we're fighting against. We would like to remove the high stakes from all standardized testing.
Yeah, it's another big irony here, right? That it's all this accountability, but everybody gets punished, as it were,
right,
for their own good.
Exactly.
So it's a kind of very like Victorian, sadomasochistic kind of approach to education.
Yeah, and it started 15 years ago with NCLB, and that was about punishing schools.
What's that? Just
No Child Left Behind.
Oh, right.
No
right.
Child Left
I'm
Behind.
I'm terrible with acronyms.
Yeah,
right.
And we have a lot of acronyms. I should have brought you a cheat sheet on acronyms.
God,
I start using too many, please let me
know. I've given up decades ago, so I asked for explanation.
I keep threatening to write a blog which contains only acronyms. But so No Child Left Behind was about punishing schools, and now we have Race to the Top, which is about punishing teachers. So it's, and those are both federally mandated programs.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And the kids, of course, are the ones who actually have to sit through the data.
Correct. They have to produce the data that everybody's going to be punished with.
So, and again, I mean, it's funny, like I said, this show, we go all over the place, but we end up covering a lot of things. This punishment. I mean, punishment is a big deal. I mean, in history and economics and politics and jurisprudence everywhere. But, and it's not always, isn't there that movie that everybody keeps talking about, and I couldn't care less, Punishment, 50 Shades of Grey, right? We have the obligate, yeah. It seems that everybody's talking about it. I never read it, never watched it, have no idea, some sort of S&M thing. Everybody have a good time, so long as it doesn't cause a murder, as the great Frank Zappa used to say. But, it's for the parents. There is that rhetoric that we find, right? It's for the parents to give them control, to give them, right, take away control from the evil government, the evil teachers, the evildoers, and give control back to the parents. But, of course, I'd like to point out the parents get punished, too. I mean, be very personal. I mean, trying to get our kids through school has been the primary. Happily, we're relatively healthy, so that's not a source of stress for us. But the primary source of stress in my life and my wife's life has been our kids' schooling.
Right, right.
So we're being punished too. Of course.
As kids, like, I mean, that's really all we really have to deal with, and it's kind of overwhelming since we've been dealing with it since basically we've entered the public school system. My sister's thankfully gone from it, so she has less to deal with.
We tried homeschooling. We tried private, of course, is extremely expensive. We have one of them in one of those. It's per hour. We're forced to go to a school that is not in line with our religious beliefs or lack thereof, just because at least they're nice about it.
Sure, and I would, you know,
for Christ's sake.
Before the show started, you mentioned that you were required to take these tests.
The
yeah, right, right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's one of the things that we work really hard to help people understand is that by statute, you're required to participate in testing.
Yeah.
And the word participate is not defined by Florida law. So if you look at the 7 months of test prep that you are experiencing from the beginning of the school year to the point where you are actually going to be delivered the test, do you not, as a student, consider yourself having participated in the testing process?
I mean,
yeah.
That's what school has turned into. It's
correct.
Test prep, test review, test.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it almost 100 days of the year I saw somewhere? I don't know if it's a Florida number or a national number.
I'm not sure of the numbers myself.
And that's going to vary by grade level. Juniors are the most tested grade in the K through 12 public school system. But a lot of that has to do with all of the college prep tests that they're going to be taking, SAT, ACT, PERT. This year, 11th graders are going to be asked to take, for the very first time, a state standardized test. And the FSA, or the Florida Standards Assessment, is the test that's replacing FCAT. Mm-hmm. And when you were in 10th grade, you probably thought that was it. You didn't have to do it again. Well, guess what?
Yeah, they did tell us in elementary school, 10th grade is the end. Once you're there,
that's
you're
right.
Done.
That's right. And now they kind of forgot that promise to you.
Sure.
But
yeah.
I will say that if you look at the graduation requirements for your cohort, you will not find the FSA there as a graduation requirement. So we're about to launch a statewide campaign to let all 11th graders know that if they would like to become active and civilly disobedient, don't take the test. It's not required. And the only thing it means to you is a sticker on your diploma. That's it. The colleges will not know whether you took that test or how well you did. You're going to get a pretty little scholar sticker, and you won't even know you're going to get it until you're in the car on the way home from graduation.
Wow.
So that's what that day of testing means. The 11th grade FSA is about exit data collection, because they want to get you at the, you know, on the way out of the system.
They always spin it as getting us ready and stuff like that.
What are they getting you ready for at that point? You probably already know the college you're going to go to, probably have some applications out there. You know, what is the point of testing an 11th grader in the spring before their senior year?
The life of the copper top from the Matrix.
Senior year, near the end of the year, we lose monstrous amounts of seniors because, like, unless they have a test or they're part of chorus or something, they're just not going anymore because they're done. So,
sure.
I mean, any test passed that point, really, past some of the AP exams and stuff, it's just empty.
Right.
There's nothing more that you can test us on. There's nothing more to learn at that point. We've learned everything we're going to learn in high school by the time we're in the last few months of senior year.
Yeah, so unless you're really part of a community, you've disconnected at that point. Yeah.
So before we go in, we want to make sure that we explain, you know, why, what's the problem, why are we complaining about exams or over-examination, roles of exam, high risk, non-high risk, a lot of things like that, the industry, the profit motive behind it, etc. You're intriguing me about this. I mean, what this? I love it. Civil disobedience within school. I mean, after all, the schooling system is really a place where we are trained to be drones, where we have no human rights, right? There's no constitutional rights even, right? I mean, especially poor kids, we know, get harassed by police without any constitutional protection and delivered to the authorities through their administration. It's really an ugly story of how we are, you know, the education we get is that we have no rights, even rights that we do have, at least theoretically. You're talking about, I mean, how would that jeopardize the schooling system? In some sense, I would leave my kids at home to play video games and read books all day if it wasn't for the fear of they have to get into college. So I applaud the civil disobedience in some sense, right? I mean, I think they would learn a lot.
And I think that, you know, we have a generation of students who really don't know what it means to be civilly disobedient. And so you know, the idea of resisting the system is something that when they catch on, it's very exciting. Mm-hmm. Because they've been conditioned to think that they're defined by a certain number of requirements, whether that's testing or something else within the system. So, but yeah, I mean, any great movement that has really caused and initiated permanent change has come from civil disobedience. It's where you've tried everything else. You've tried working within the system. For us, we've appealed to our school board members and our legislators, and we've watched them all point fingers at each other. Mm-hmm. We've tried all of the more traditional methods of forcing or encouraging change, and we've not, after years, been able to get that to start happening.
Sure.
So the only thing left is to disobey. Mm-hmm. And
or raise a lot of money.
Sure, and that's what we're competing against, are people that have money to control things like the message, the media, and the reasons for the need to standardize everything about the lives of ourselves and our kids. So,
'cause right, most people really kind of don't see how problematic it is when it came to. It's just an example, right? The gay right, equal marriage. A lot of money was raised. That's why progress was made. Because recently the Princeton study showed that public opinion has zero, literally zero, not small, zero impact on policy itself. How did we get progress, if you're inclined to believe like me that that's fine, that everybody should marry whoever they want, because a lot of money was raised.
Yeah.
So is there a potential, do you think, at some point of raising the, I guess a lot of people in America, whatever their politics, at some point decided they want their kids to happen to be gay to have the right to get married.
Right.
So that happened to, that worked out. You know, rich people put money in this system and therefore it passed. Do you think there's a hope that rich parents would join your cause?
You know, I don't spend a lot of time, and I guess this might, demonstrate how naive I am, but for us, I mean, people come to this movement because their children are somehow experiencing pain, whether it's because they're failing the tests or because they find school to be an agonizing experience with the way that we teach to standards and everybody has to be on the same page at the same bite. But for us, people come to us when they're already in pain.
Mm-hmm.
So our goal is to help them alleviate some of that pain. Whether or not somebody comes along with money to help us fund campaigns, sure, that's a fantasy and that's a wonderful thing, but we're not going to wait around for that to happen, because if we don't put our heads down and keep moving forward in spite of threats coming from people like the Commissioner of Education, Pam Stewart, we're gonna allow ourselves to get stalled out. So sure, it'd be great to have funding behind the message, but when you talk about that, when you talk about funding on a level that could really truly make an impact, then you're moving on to dealing with the federal government on standardized issues. So now you're looking at fighting Common Core, and that's a really huge topic.
Not to mention all the rich parents that you were talking about, Daddy.
all send their kids to private schools, so they don't care.
Or tutoring and stuff. So that's actually absolutely correct, right? I mean, I stand corrected. There is, if your kids are having a hard time in school and you're rich,
you just move them.
Avenues.
There's a ways to solve your to alleviate your pain.
Absolutely. The 25% poverty level we have in this country can be witnessed in the number of kids that fail these tests. And in Florida, we had 9,000 students last year that did not graduate only because of one test. And probably if you took a look at their demographics, you're going to be able to tell what their zip code is. It wouldn't be a big surprise. We had 50,000 students not graduate, which means 41,000 fell through the cracks in some other way. But test scores are really a measurement of a family's income.
Yeah.
So
that is a fact.
So I had a...
Jay Gordon stepped in here, kind of been...
Yeah, been so I had a question, about the movement. So I know that you're talking about the pernicious aspects of standardized testing, and of course, from what I've been hearing, you've been doing a great job trying to combat that. So I really do appreciate that. But what do you think about, say, things like grades in a classroom? That does also cause students quite a bit of pain. So let me put it this way. So you have, you group students into these hierarchies through grades, who's smart, who's not so smart or dumb. And, that's also a way of telling, students, zip code or how many educational resources they have and they don't have. What are you doing, with regards to that aspect of education, where we're looking at things like grades that build this sort of competitive atmosphere that's almost in a way somewhat bullying or humiliating to various
students. Sure. Well, and even when you talk about the shaming of public school students, my specific interest is going to be in testing, but I understand what you're saying. And for us, what we want is to have students evaluated based on what you're talking about. So you and I may have some conflicting ideas here, because when we talk about high stakes and kids who are remediated or retained or denied a diploma based on a test, what we want instead of that is for the total student experience in the classroom to be part of those decisions. So we want grades to be part of the decision. We want teacher recommendations to be part of the decision. And, if you can help me maybe with a specific example, I mean, are you talking about high school or are you talking about secondary? I mean, what level do you have a personal experience you want to tell me about?
In terms of my college experience, really, I didn't really, when I was going through college and high school as well, I didn't get good grades necessarily, but I wouldn't necessarily have said that I was a bad student.
Sure.
It was just that the classes that I were doing were not very interested or were not interesting.
But these would have been requirements for the program you were in,
right?
Okay.
So yeah. So and this is what I'm kind of getting at too. So for me, the classes weren't very interesting or didn't hold my interest very much,
mm-hmm.
so I never really did the work.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had looked at my college grades on a sheet of paper, you would, or even my high school grades, you would have said, well, okay, he's an average student or not that great. But when I went to graduate school, because I was doing stuff that I was interested in and I could choose my own courses, then the grades got a little bit better. But And also graduate school is a little bit different because
Absolutely.
Everybody tends to, when they're in graduate school, everybody tends to get A's. So you're not necessarily creating a hierarchy of who's smart and who's not. And I think part of that pain with schooling comes from the fact that we may be teaching students things that doesn't hold their interest.
Or sure. So really, it's not necessarily about the grading system. It's more about the thinking that students need a well-rounded education, including taking freshman comp and U.S. history when you're an engineering major. So you're talking about maybe having the opportunity to have a more technical option for education.
Well, I don't know. Now I have to. I think they do need that. I think maybe it's more about how.
Yeah.
I think it's more about the how.
And should it be then that classes that aren't directly in line with your final career path, should they maybe be weighted at less in your GPA than what your course of study classes are? I mean, that's
part of it. So that's a part of it. But the reason why I also brought up interest too is that I think that grades are somewhat pernicious in this regard, in that what you're doing is that you're actually teaching students that things aren't worth doing for their own sake. So you just do this subject or you just do this course, and if you have the resources to hack the test, you hack the test and you forget about it. And
you do what?
Hack it. No, seriously, figure out, like I told Felix, he's doing great in high school now, right? I told you it's like a video game, right?
Yeah.
It's not your learning thing. You have to figure out what the boss is, what the ability the boss has, good equipment will make it.
But all of this, all of what you're talking about right now is about destroying what education was supposed to be about, which is creating lifelong learners, people who love the process. And I mean, I would go to college for the rest of my life if I didn't have to do anything else. And unfortunately, I do have to do other things. But I wouldn't want to be put into a defined mode. I wouldn't want to have to be told you have to do this. And I just want to get a degree in lifelong learning. So, I think that what you're talking about is, the root of it probably starts at a much earlier age than college level. And it's just, you're just reaping the rewards of everything that's been happening, unfortunately.
I think he's also speaking to the pedagogical problem with the grading system as such. We had shows on this, the entire discussion's a kind of crazy gamified nonlinear pedagogy that I try and develop, where indeed there are very little grading going on, and there's zero stakes. Not low stakes. There's zero stake. Everything can be resubmitted. Nothing is forever. You can just work your way up to an A without exception.
So the object is just to do your best work.
And you have a lot of choice, but it's guided choice, but it's through the carrot, not the stick. So one of the things that launched me into doing this kind of work is precisely doing some homework on pedagogy and realizing that what we do in schools flies in the face of what we know works for teaching. Whether it be vocational teaching, technical specific, professionals teaching, liberal arts, anything. This system is a system, it's a Germanic 19th century system designed to make skilled workers who obey orders.
Which goes against the civil disobedience we started talking about.
Certainly.
Right. And they do not want us to be civilly disobedient.
So yes, there is that element of teaching people to obey, and that's an important role, an implicit role.
Sure.
And respond to what Jay was talking about also, and both of you were, this is the extrinsic motivators, like grades, right?
Mm-hmm.
To get that intrinsic motivator is not easy, right? Where you actually chose your work, you're actually interested in it, and the teacher's trying to create the path of least resistance, right? Seduce you into reading the material, not, hitting you over the head with it. In our context, I think above all, listeners need to understand that when they are taught about how, we have to have these common core, we have to have these exams in order to make for better engineers, to better educate our children and all that, sorry, that's against the science. That's no, the Earth is round.
Well,
it's not
we've
flat.
Been, but we've been
it's
doing this.
Science.
I mean, No Child Left Behind. Mm-hmm. The requirement for No Child Left Behind was that everybody be proficient by 2014 in math and reading, and we failed at that. So what do? We came up with another federal requirement in Race to the Top.
More of the same stupidity.
Right. Sure. Right. So, it is. You know, the expectation of Common Core is that every student in every single class in their cohort will be on the same page mm-hmm. every day of the year. And it eliminates the student because God forbid that you are struggling with a concept because you're out of luck. They're going to the next page the next day.
Right.
And to motivate that, Race to the Top requires performance pay, which means that when a teacher is going through an evaluation, if the administrator steps into the classroom at a time that the teacher chose to work with the student who maybe was falling behind, if they're not on the right page, they're evaluated based on that.
In our
and
school,
they're then paid based on that.
Effectively, in our school, all that Common Core really does is bother everybody and make the teachers write these gigantic paragraphs full of stuff that nobody understands on the board. The administrators, like, very, very rarely come in, and when they do, they just both complain about how Common Core is making them do that.
Well, and you're in high school. We've seen the most impact on a daily basis on elementary-age kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's profound. It's not just the core standards themselves. It is the constant nonstop testing it takes to support the Common Core. I mean, we have kids. We have an entire mm-hmm. recess movement.
No.
I mean, it's kind of unbelievable that we have parents, and lots of them, devoting their time to bring 20 minutes of recess back to public schools, where all of the data, all of the research says kids need 20 minutes of recess. The people that are making these decisions specifically in Orange County have said, well, we can't fit it in. We have too much test prep.
Did they get rid of it in elementary school?
Oh, yeah. There's no recess. Wow. Now, if you ask the Orange County Public Schools, they will tell you out of 126 of the measured schools that 100 of them have some kind of recess. But that's not defined. That could mean that they had the first graders stand up and stretch and wave their hands around. That's recess.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it starts very young. And the younger kids are, we now have end of course exams, which means that every kid in every grade, kindergarten through 12th grade, will take a test on every single course taught. That means kindergartners are going to take seven exams.
That's during the year, right?
That's in the spring. And so they're going to take a music exam and a math exam. And the state allows you to weight those up to 30% of the grade. Our district is choosing to evaluate them at 0%. But you want to talk high risk? I mean, and no opportunity to recover? If you fail a couple of end-of-course exams in high school, you can lose your spot in ranking, which means you lose scholarships, you lose ability to be accepted into college, and because state end-of-course exams are worth 30% of your grade. So,
yeah, I mean, that's a very... That's a very pernicious effect of nationalized testing, and I tend to agree with everything that was said, and you know, more to Benny's point about having kids at least do the things that they're interested in and mm-hmm. at least trying their best. I think that we need to focus more on intrinsic motivators instead of the extrinsic ones, because part of the painful process, as I stated before, is that grades ranking children into smart and dumb, and you kind of have this really nasty hierarchy that kids are starting out with that sort of sets the base or sets the ground for the high stakes testing.
Well, in secondary education, for instance, you chose Rollins to come to school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are other choices where there is, it's, you know, you have a school that's designed around what you choose to design for yourself, where it's all pass fail. And I mean,
it's very rare, sadly.
It is very rare.
In line with what we know about how to run a school.
Correct.
If we really try and do it right.
Correct. Correct. Yes. And I'm only familiar with this because, my husband is from Sarasota and New College is there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, there's a very, it's not just you. It's everybody can't succeed at that. I mean, even in my own family, I have one kid who would do really well with very few boundaries and one that would fail miserably and would need a more traditional way to be assessed to keep them moving forward. And I would do terrible at a place like New College. I want the markers. For me, it takes the markers to keep me moving forward. So I get what you're saying.
Right.
And I get what you're saying about it being rare, but unless we demand it, unless we say we want that kind of learning, that's what we want, it's not going to change. And so it goes back to my point of creating the change that you want to see. And I know that is such a cliche, but it does work. I mean, it does work.
No, absolutely. That's actually, we'll get back to some sure complicated. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is it? Isn't it like some Wednesday pretty soon? I mean, how do we blow stuff up?
How do you blow stuff?
Well, I mean, you know
about?
What where's the agitation? Yeah, where's the revolution? You know, where's the agitation? I mean, what is the direct action that we could actually accomplish that you were saying without jeopardizing the careers of the students? Because, you know, as a parent, that's kind of fearful. I mean, which Wednesday is that when we're supposed to, I saw it right somewhere.
Yeah, it was today.
Supposed to not send.
Yeah, it was today. Yeah. And, today in Orange County, Orange County did a load test. And what that means is that they have to certify with the state of Florida Department of Education that their system is ready to deliver the test. So they wanted all kids, 5th through 10th grade, to turn on the computers and play on the software all at the same time to see if it crashed or not.
Okay.
And what we really know for sure is that when the whole state boots up, it's really going to – Miami-Dade is mammoth. When they boot up and start testing, we don't think anybody else is even going to be able to sign on to the system. So – so
it's like voting system, you know, when they wait for Florida at the end.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people absent today.
Well, we asked them to be absent, so I'm glad to hear that.
You should follow her blog. You would have told me. I would have given you a note today.
Yeah, so we asked kids
What's your blog again?
I probably couldn't have done it. Though,
it's optoutorlando.wordpress.com.
Okay.
And so we really wanted just to build awareness here. So I said, let's keep everybody home tomorrow. Let's not participate in the load test. There's no risk involved in not participating in load test, but it is a form of disobedience.
There would have been a risk for me because this morning I had a pretty big essay that I had to take. It's not like I can just not go to school.
Asked you to participate in the load test, you could have said, I'm not going to participate in the load test.
Well, we were like in the middle of a project with computers, and they wouldn't let us in the media center. So the teacher said, well, they gave us laptops for some reason. Just use them. So we did.
So your media center has turned into a testing center
already. Yeah. Every time there's a test, it's usually in the media center.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what are other forms? What are really these ways in which we could, not politically, not centrally, but in this kind of a civil disobedience mode, try and resist these developments in school? That's very
well. I mean, anybody can opt out of the test. The test meaning the Florida Standards Assessment, which is the replacement for FCAT. Any grade cannot take that test.
And there are no penalties.
Well, there aren't penalties, but you have to learn how to work the system, basically.
Okay.
And so the high-risk years are 3rd and 10th grade. 3rd grade, if you don't pass the test, you get retained. You have to stay in 3rd grade. And that means it doesn't matter if you have all A's. If you don't pass the test, you stay in 3rd grade. And there are alternative assessments that students who fail can try. And those same alternative assessments can be used if you refuse the test. So you can ask for a portfolio to be developed for your student. You can, in Orange County, they use the ITBS test, which is a very different kind of test. In fact, I would ask, if anybody wants to know more about testing, go to fairtest.org. It'll define summative, informative testing.
And, of course, you can find that on punkonomics.org.
Also. Yeah, I'll try and assemble a list when we post the podcast.
Excellent. So
You know, you have to really figure out what are your convictions, first of all, if you're talking about opting out, because it's not for the faint of, it's not for the faint at heart. You have to know, are you resisting federal intrusion on local decisions? Does your kid just not take tests well, but they do really great in school? You know, do you know the tests are crap and they were written for kids to fail? You have to decide that first. And then you work your way to, you know, figuring out which tests am I going to not take? How am I going to participate in the resistance to get to support public education? And that's really the root of this. We would like to hold on to what's left of public education and try to restore some autonomy to teachers and schools. So, but the process of opting out, anybody can do it. You're not going to hear that from administrators. They're going to say, oh, no, it's not allowed. Well, let me tell you, if you want to see a bunch of moms get pissed, tell them they're not allowed to do something with their kid. So, and that, mm-hmm. that develops great awareness, and they can start looking for information on the process of opt-out. But we do it within the law. We just kind of use the lack of definition of the word participation.
Because it's scary, though. You know, I mean, I subscribe to all of those things. You said we have to decide. I agree about everything you just said, yet you're concerned. I mean, how is my kid gonna get a scholarship to a good school where he could flourish academically?
No college asks for your state standardized test grade. Not one.
Right, just for the general GPA.
Not one single college has ever asked for an FCAT score. They really don't care. In fact, if you call Michigan right now and say, you know, do you care what my FCAT score is? They're going to say, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what an FCAT score is. They want to see your transcript. They want to see the body of
work. And where does Common
Core
fit into this picture?
Common Core?
Yeah.
Well, Common Core, the Common Core state standards are a set of standards. It's what we are testing. So the Florida Standards Assessment, or the FSA, is the vehicle that the Common Core standards are measured by.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people get confused. They say Common Core testing. It's not, I mean, we don't have a Common Core test. Mm-hmm. We have a Florida Standards Assessment that measures the test measures the standards that were learned or not learned. And in Florida, we changed the name because our governor didn't want anybody to know that we really had Common Core standards. So we call them the Florida State Standards, and we test the Florida State Standards with the Florida Standards Assessment.
Oh, he probably thought that common sounds kind of communist.
Well, there was a great push after states accepted it. I wish he'd been. I really wish he had been that creative. I don't think he was.
Am I overestimating Rick here?
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, that brings us to, since the show is Punkonomics, it's called Punkonomics, let's look at the economics behind that decision to check all these students. Now, of course, there are costs for making these tests. Who are paying for this? What is the benefit? So someone is paying for that.
Of course,
they're going to get something in return, you know?
People call it today, right, the testing industrial complex. So this is a big deal, and anybody who had to pay a lot of money just to have another digital copy of their transcript sent to somebody from, what is that company that used to be? That's
College Board?
No, there was when SAT, back in the day, GREs, SATs, TOEFL I had to take as a foreigner. Now it's huge, you know.
Yeah. Board is who you get your scores from.
Well,
now,
maybe,
for SAT,
right, right.
And ACT.
It's billion dollars a year industry. It's a pretty
big
industry.
Which is run by David Coleman. David Coleman is the father of Common Core State Standards. So.
No, it all feeds. There is definitely a profit motive here. So we have the more soft stuff, as you know, teaching our kids not to think, not to resist, to obey orders, etc. But a significant a money aspect here. So if we indeed cut budgets to schools, that would also, there's an entire great movement championed by Rahm Emanuel in Chicago.
Rahm Emanuel, who closed 50 schools last year.
Yeah, gut the public school system, right? Create for-profit schools. Doctor the numbers so it looks like they provide better results.
I thought the Democrats were supposed to be better for education.
Oh, well, yes.
Yeah, but our Democrats, I mean, we're talking about Arne Duncan, who with Race to the Top created his own set of rules and said, you follow my rules or else. But, you know, talking about the economics of testing is a really gigantic conversation. But, you know, just for people who are interested in what it cost if their student were to fail a test.
just third grade, it costs $11,000 to remediate a third grader. So if you
per
have third
student.
Per student, right. So if we had 9,000 students that didn't pass the test and didn't graduate last year, not only is there a cost to keep testing them, because if you fail, doggone it, aren't they going to give you more chances? And isn't the school system going to have to pay for more chances? And yet they graduate with nothing. So then you have to look at the economic cost after they leave the system. They can't get a job. And that's another whole big conversation. So, but just if you start at the local level, if you have a group of students that don't pass, then there's cost to that. You have to have support documentation. They have to be remediated. So all of those materials they're going to get in to support them, it's going to be paid for. It's not an accident that that 70% are going to fail.
So I had a question about the cost part of it as well. What is
cost to whom?
Right.
I mean, we always have to keep that clear, right?
There are
costs
to the
families,
right, yeah.
and all that. But also there's a cost to the school system. There's a lot of these. A part of the process was just described. There's a lot of amount of funds that are taken, taxpayer money that was could be funding to the schools. Once they fail, they get diverted towards other institutions, often that are for profit and private, so there is that element of cost. Yeah.
So I will say that there is a cost directly to at least some subjects within the educational system. So the teaching to the test mentality does have a significant cost for, say, something like science and scientific development and industry, and just getting more kids interested in something like the sciences.
Can I say something about science real quick before
right.
I forget?
Sure.
Just so you know, unless science is tested at the grade level, science isn't taught anymore in public school.
Wow.
Because they can't afford to not, they can only afford to teach what they're going to test. So, for instance, fifth grade is the only grade in elementary school that is tested in science. So the majority of the schools in a school system won't teach science at all until they get into the grade where they're going to be tested. Unless, of course, you have a magnet program where science is the heavy and that's what they're focusing on. But the majority, there used to be science labs in every elementary school in Orange County, and they eliminated that last year because if you taught something, you had to have an end of course exam for it. And so there's science is wiped off the face of the earth for elementary school kids. So
that is pretty.
That's an aberrant example of the fundamental pedagogical problem of this
And of the cost. I mean, there are costs that can't be defined in dollars. Well,
so I didn't. Yes. Yeah,
quality.
So I didn't have an idea that the costs were that bad. Mm-hmm. I know that. So I know that Michio Kaku went on record on Big Think and spoke about his daughter being disinterested in science due to some of these tests.
Yeah.
And he also talked about how basically crappy the tests were because, you know, they had a geology test and they didn't mention.
Mm-hmm.
He said something to the effect that they didn't mention plate tectonics, which is big thing in geology.
Yeah.
So
just talk about rocks.
Sorta. Yeah.
you know, in fact, you can't.
There's
can
rocks
have,
and there's gravel.
Yeah,
no,
you can't have
rocks,
geology without it.
Rocks.
But I didn't know it was that bad to where we were excluding science programs
but that's how these standardized exams function, you see. I mean, because they're highly reductive, right? There's a lot of stuff that is very difficult to measure with a standardized multiple choice exam, as any teacher that's worth calling himself that knows. So if you're doing these standardization, well, this is my time to tell the joke, right? You meet the drunk looking for his keys, right, under the lamp post at night. And you ask him, what's going on? He says, I'm looking for my keys. Where'd you lose? You lost them here? Can I help you? He said, no, I lost them back in the dark alley. So what are you looking for them here for? Well, there's light here. So these measurements, it's not funny, it's kind of sad, right? But this is seriously, it is driven by what is easy to measure, right? Cheap and easy to measure. Therefore, we can take all that taxpayers' money and provide them with a crappy exam with which to take even more, but the quality gets sacrificed here. So science, yeah, lab is expensive. How do you test lab, you know? There's different skills involved, right? There's the person who's really good at organizing things. There's the person who's really good at actually the hands-on work of the lab. That gets forgotten.
The cost, that's an interesting point. You know, science labs are expensive. In the case of what happened in Orange County, it wasn't the lab that was expensive. It was the how much it was going to cost them to create the end of course exam. Mm. Because mm.
Lab exam of some kind.
Well,
right?
We took the Race to the Top money, we agreed that we would evaluate teachers and we would pay them based on those evaluations. Mm. So what our state decided to do was to develop end of course exams, which is a test for every single class offered. And the districts themselves are required to fund that, anything that's not provided by the state. And the only tests provided by the state are Algebra 1 and 2, Geometry, U.S. History, Civics, and Biology. Mm-hmm. Everything else, all other electives the test has to be developed by the district. And they have to pay somebody to do that.
Right.
So they decided, if we continue to teach science, K through 4, we have to develop a test for K through 4 science. So it's not just, they dismantled labs that were well stocked. It was just about the test.
So I didn't have my education here, but, I did have it in the Caribbean, where, at least in high school anyway, you had a standardized, somewhat international exam. It's comparable to England's GCSE A levels and O levels. So you had those two exams, once in your junior year and another time in, what would be 12th grade.
And what were those stakes attached to the test?
Actually, that was pretty interesting because with those exams, for me anyway, when I came over here, those determined what high school courses, because I did my O levels, I didn't do my A levels, and then I came over here, but that determined what high school courses I took over here, like AP exams.
Which here, your transcript would determine that, like if you move from one state to the other.
But what they did with science, or at least the lab testing, was that you had the lab work in the classroom, and you would do the lab work and you'd write up your labs, and the teacher would collect them in this book, and then when you signed up for your exam, if you were taking chemistry, they would mail off the labs and they would be graded, right? So you actually did the labs there and that was your lab test. So you did it within the classroom over the course of, say, 2 years to have those. And you did a lot of them, so it wasn't very high stakes to have those.
And you can repeat. These traditional systems, if you fail the entire thing, you can just take
right.
it again.
Right, and you could also redo your labs and stuff like that mm-hmm. too, right? So you had time to kind of work on them if you wanted to redo the experiment
in this state, if you, in 10th grade, if you fail the test, you can't graduate until you pass it. So you have the option to keep trying over and over and over again to take the same test until you pass it. They do offer the option to get a concordance score on SAT or ACT. And so you can spend 2 years doing nothing but testing. And while you're being tested, you're being remediated. So kids who really, really need help to incentivize them to stay in school mm-hmm. are being stuck in reading classes. They don't get to experience the classes that keep them interested in high school.
So those exams were also pretty high stakes. you know, you could graduate if you pass. You would have to pass. You do your courses. You'd have to pass at least five of them to graduate.
Yeah, like in France, so. The famous baccalaureate. Many people take it again. It's kind of, you know, passing them the first time is not necessarily the case, and some people don't pass them at all. You know, it's maybe a point to mention before we're slowly approaching the top of the hour. That there are different ways of dealing with it. I mean, I tend to be kind of radical on pedagogy, and I really would like to see dramatic changes in how we do it, both because I think we can do it better. Just because we've done it a certain way for 100 years doesn't mean it's so good. And secondly, because the world has dramatically changed on so many levels, and the education system has to adapt. But put that aside for a second. Other places that are kind of should be similar to the United States, so rich countries, that even adopt some of these things that I don't particularly like standardized testing, some degree of high stakes, do it a little bit different. Even, let me say, right, these hardcore Tea Party free market Randians that seem to be very much powerfully behind this kind of thing, accountability of teachers and all that stuff, they are the guys who are creating a bigger and bigger, more out-of-touch bureaucracy central planning model of education. So I put to them that they're full of it. But countries like some Scandinavian countries, right, will also have standardized tests, will even have a lot of, will also have, in fact, the kind of the right-wing free market approach of charter schools, but they're well-funded, and teachers are allowed to control the curriculum, and exams, you can take them again, and labs are not dismantled. And you have encouragement and even incentives to try and adapt to different learning styles so that students with different talents can shine in their own way.